It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
With me, Ernest Hancock, Thomas Ferguson, professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts in Boston, and a senior fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, says we should be afeared of what's going on in Washington, D.C. in regards to how we're going to, I don't know, what are we going to try and clean up, professor? What are we trying to do?
Well, okay, that question is a touch puzzling, too. Here's why. You remember these guys kicked into place the Angelides Commission, which was supposed to investigate the causes of all this and what happened. Then they didn't wait for the report. They're not going to report until after the November elections. In the meantime, they passed the first and really only big, quote, reform, unquote, bill they've got. So, you know, that's what are we doing here? This is a little, you know, this is worth a moment's thought. I think what we can say very simply is that they claim this is a response to fix what was wrong with the financial system in 2008. But for sure, the heart of that problem was the so-called too big to fail problem. That is to say, you've got banks so big that if they go down, they take everybody or a whole lot of people with them.
Okay, why? Let's stop right there.
Because they're huge. And
so?
They, a lot of people owe them money. They owe money to a lot more banks. They're
okay,
very
okay,
dense.
Okay, okay, let's go ahead and just dissect this.
Yep.
Why are they so big?
Well, why are they so big? Hey, being a bank in the last 25 or 30 years has been fabulously profitable, right?
Okay, here we go. One more time. Why?
Because everybody bowed down to banks, put simply, and essentially thought they could actually run a modern financial system with a minimum of regulation.
Oh,
that's just stupid.
We don't have enough regulation. Okay. We
have the wrong kind. You remember when the Republicans, it was actually the Democrats, grabbed back in the late 90s, they did that, we're going to cut up all the regulations, and they did a big mugging scene where they sort of all were grinning for cameras, all the regulators, and just shredding stuff after the so-called repeal of Glass-Steagall was passed in, 1999? I mean, that kind of sort of crazy stuff. The notion that you can just leave large banks to do what they want and that they'll do everything and it will work out fine for you is crazy.
Okay, let me tell you, give me my perspective. Warning. Libertarian, okay?
Okay.
Let's
just talk. I mean, a lot of my friends are libertarians.
I'm going to tell you exactly what they've been telling you. this is what I see is the problem, and nobody ever addresses the problem. They have created enormous buckets of money. And when you have enormous buckets of money using the tax code and social and economic engineering for your 401k, the way the tax structure is for IRAs, whatever it is that they do, pension funds, to where you have billions of dollars sitting in a bucket there that's being managed by, you know, a handful or even one guy. They need somebody's signature that's a pension fund manager for California's public workers, de la, whatever the heck it is. You create these enormous buckets of money using social and economic engineering from Congress with the tax code, with all kinds of stuff. I guarantee you, no matter how many regulations you have, no matter how many agencies you got, you will have people that have the inside knowledge of how to get access to that bucket of money. And they're going to say, everybody all in, you got all your chips on the table, everybody all in. Now, you all in, you all in? Okay, it's ours now.
Well, look, I actually agree that there's a serious problem just from the mere concentration. I absolutely agree with that. I'd further agree that the tax code and a whole host of other regulatory practices facilitate that. I would note, though, that you know you just did not have this type of financial collapse for 50 years after the New Deal. There's just no question that if you regulated banks much more strictly, they couldn't do the kinds of things that they were able to do after we started deregulating them in the late 1970s.
They just wanted, you know, I tell you this one concept of, you know, free range chickens. You know, the end of free range is not freedom. You know, it's just more productive chickens that eventually wind up in the chicken McNugget box anyway. They wanted to have a loose enough society to provide for more and more generation of wealth. And it's just like the Laffer curve thing. You know, Art Laffer was here in Phoenix at the invitation of the Goldwater Institute, and he was going on about, you know, how if you have 0% tax, well, you collect no money. If you have 100% tax, you're not going to collect any money because nobody will do anything. So what you need is you got to have that perfect balance of the right amount of tax on not just one thing or income or something, on everything. Get it low so you can get the maximum amount of revenue for the state. And, of course, my question was, I go, okay, well, Mr. Laffer, why would you want the maximum amount of money for the state as opposed to the individuals keeping their money? He goes, well, so you can spend it. Dummy. You know, so I'm going, oh, so this whole mechanism, whether you're on the left or the right, is to maximize revenue for the state, and or you have the banks that they need you to have this big giant pension fund. They need all these laws and social and economic engineering to create the money for them to steal later. And no matter what you pass here, I guarantee, like with the health care bill, it's going to do a bucket of money. They're just going to go get it later.
Let's stick with the banking bill, and let's just sort of focus sharply on sort of what banking practice was for the last 20 years. I think we could probably might find some grounds for agreement. Maybe we can't. I mean, you know, fundamentally, what's your view on, like, bank credit card regulation? I mean, my sense of this is that they were allowed to rip people off with ridiculous rates and that there's almost no competition in that industry. I mean, I believe I'm correct. The top two or three companies that produce those credit cards, which are sold through banks, have something like 65% or 70% of the market.
In that, and then they got bailed out.
No. The credit card guys basically didn't get bailed out.
Bank of America, they're not a credit card guy?
here's my big point is this, is that it's not true that if you leave these markets free to do whatever they want, they will necessarily be competitive at all. In fact, it's clear that unfortunately there's some fairly, though there have been some arguments about it, and I think there's some fairly substantial economies of scale in banking, so that large banks probably do have an easy time driving a lot of small ones out. But the condition, if you just leave that to the free marketplace, if you don't put some regulation in, that's effectively competition between, if you like, mice and elephants. And the mice get smashed. Thus, for example, I would not quarrel with this bill's effort to do a consumer product safety regulatory thing on financial products. I'm sort of unhappy that they put it in the Federal Reserve, which, as far as I can tell, is largely a support mechanism for large banks.
Of course it is. Yeah. You know, they're the largest. Well, except for Bank of International Settlement, which is just their central bank.
Well,
you know,
the BIS does not really function as a central bank but let's just leave that to
one. Somebody's depositing a bunch of gold with somebody right now, getting some credit so that they can turn their paper into gold, and we'll talk about that another time. But, you know, this point that I'm making is that you have all of these regulations already. None of them work, so we're just going to do more. They kept adding on more and more and more.
That's really not true. If you do a time sequence, if you do a sort of study over time of the size and number of financial crises, you see a sharp jump after the deregulation started in the 1970s. We simply did not have large bank failures in the United States from about 1935 down to about the late 60s.
It was being built. Let me give you my impression so you understand, and this is the kind of argument you're going to have to compete with, is that I have a banking system that all of a sudden they have all these promises of large accumulations of money in things like Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, all this money, promise, pinky swear, we're going to give it to you later. Well, guess when later is? Today. Right now, starting last year, this year, all the baby boomers starting to retire. I got all this money. I'm going to retire. Oh, I'm sorry. It's all gone now. When did you think it was going to be gone? 10 years ago? 20 years ago? No, when it was at its maximum. Right now, when it was at its maximum, that's when it was worth taking. Best time to take it. They took it. You know, they took it. They said, thank you for playing. It's ours now. And you want regulation. Let me tell you what regulation is. Me regulating, me not being socially and economically engineered to put money in whatever bucket they wanted, and me take responsibility for me, the free market regulate. We'll have Professor Ferguson responding to that, I pinky swear, when we come back. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Me, Ernest Hancock, there's nothing you can do about it because they won't let you. You know, I just want my own money. Give me, have my money. I put it where I want with my money. And they go, no, 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 no. You see this little line on your check? It's going to come out and it's going to go over here. You work for this company, it's going to go over here. You work for this state employee, off of your employee of this state or this municipality, and it's going to go over here. It's going to go in the bucket. It's going to go in the bucket. Got a big bucket. The bucket gets big enough. Then they go and they say, oh, all that money's ours now. Thanks for playing. And I'm going, so we're going to regulate how they're going to get access to the bucket. We never even talk. We never even bring up the fact that we have a forced savings in a bucket of money for somebody else to get, and I can't get my money out of the bucket. There is always going to be a way for them to get the bucket of money. I guarantee it. And I'm going, can I keep my money out of their bucket and keep it in my bucket? And then you can use government for what it's supposed to do, is to prosecute against force and fraud. And when somebody frauds me as an individual, instead of an entire state of employees that they go, we took, oh, who stands for them? Who's the one that gets to sue? What's the laws that even allow it? You know, so this is my point, Professor. There is going to be this big, giant ripoff, and there's nothing we're allowed to do as individuals to either get out of the sites or to be able to go against them when they do it. Instead, we bail them out.
Okay, let me take – I have to sort of stick with my topic, which was the financial reform legislation. Make two points, if I could. I mean, I'm perfectly willing to listen to you, but I need the same – courtesy coming back for me. You know, the first point I made already, which is if you leave banks to just operate in a, quote, free market, that market won't be competitive. They won't. Now, my second point is that some of these folks will get quite large, and they will be quite reckless. They will take on, for example, large amounts of leverage. When they go down, they will hit a lot of people and other banks that have nothing to do with their misbehavior. You've got to do something about that problem. That's why the pure libertarian solution won't work.
Keep my money out of their reach. I'm not allowed.
It's a smoking in bed problem. You know?
I'm not allowed. Why?
Even if you keep it out of their reach, somebody else's thing will be in there, and they'll take the whole. They can take misbehavior by these guys can take the whole show down. And that's the libertarian thing here. Just doesn't work. I mean, there's some cases.
Really? It's going to happen regardless, Professor. It's coming. There's not a damn thing anybody can do about it because this financial system is done.
I have to say, I think, you know, some intelligent regulation can actually stop this stuff.
So you think this economy is salvageable? Seriously, you think the dollar can be saved? That these pensions are somehow going to be refunded or something?
The dollar's been going up, right? For the last few months, it's just been steadily up. It's actually become a problem for the Obama administration.
So I'm going to put you down for that. Professor Ferguson believes the dollar is going to survive. It's going to go up.
It is. What I said was it's been going up since pretty steadily since about January.
In fact, I've been watching the stock market go from 6,000 and something to 11,000 back down, you know, doing this wave thing a la the Great Depression. I mean, so that don't mean nothing to me. I need the future. You think the dollar is going to be salvageable or not?
I don't think we're looking at anything like hyperinflation, and I don't see it as a serious problem. And I think all the predictions of high inflation are going to turn out to be just as wrong as they were in the case of the Japanese financial crisis in the 90s, you know, where everybody, as they flooded their place with so-called quantitative easing, in fact, you know, then and now, they still have no inflation.
They got no economy either.
That's not true. They have the average human in Japan has probably fared fairly steadily better. It's not true that their economy's been disastrous. Their growth rates were pretty low, but they were fairly steady. And anybody who visits Japan will find an enormous amount of good things there. I mean, it's pretty shocking to see the state, for instance, just how well the public transit systems work. I've been there a couple times.
Is that a standard by which we judge a country is how their public transit?
Well, you know, when you get off, say, in Logan Airport in Boston, and the whole thing looks like the moon as you drive into the rest of the city, it does. It's not the only standard. It's not a bad one, nor the absence of extreme poverty, nor beggars. Which is something everybody also notes about Japan, though it's no longer true they have, you know, no unemployed or things like that. But, I think these are things you can learn from other countries. I do think that. I'll tell you, I'm going to have to leave in a couple minutes, not because I want to, but...
No, I know you stayed a little extra. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I want to give you
I have a dinner that I got to actually go to. We can continue this some other time. I got a lot of libertarian friends. One of my friends ran actually on a libertarian candidate down in the state. I won't identify it. We could just talk.
Well, this is the one thing that I have, Professor, is that, you know, they always say, well, libertarian, you know, thing won't work. I'm like, one, when have we ever had a free market? The only time we ever had a free market is when it did work, before all this crap. And then I'm going, okay, well, then compared to what? What we got now? Oh, you know, you're just an anarchist. I go, compared to what?
I am not pushing the American system now as a model for anything. And as you know, it has to be clear, I hope implicitly, I'm pretty critical of the financial reform legislation.
Well, Professor, I appreciate you coming on. Is there any website or information you want to give out to people
stuff? Well, you just go to the Roosevelt Institute website, New Deal 2.0. But, I mean, I sometimes write there, but mostly other people do. I'm not trying to push anything at all, thank you.
All right. Thanks for spending time with us.
On a radio show, that is just about impossible to understand. But anyway, I enjoyed this. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Thanks for coming on.
Bye.
Roosevelt Institute. Well, what the heck? Let's go take a look at it. New Deal 2.0. Does that tell you anything? I mean, okay. You know, I get New Deal 2.0. Let's go take a look here. All right. Well, I see it right here. Let's. What is it? New at Roosevelt program, people, policy and ideas. Let's go there. Let's see what they have. We read the first paragraph and we can pretty much, you know, say what's what. It is common sense to take an idea and try it. If it fails, admit it frankly and try another. Above all, try something. You know what I try? Freedom. Let's do freedom. How about that? I get to keep my money. See, the one thing that, you know, I like having these guys on, not because I agree with any of their things, it's because I disagree. You know, a lot of times, I give you an example. We have set music that we do. I got a lot of music that I could use, but I use a lot of the same stuff. You'll hear different things depending on the person that I have that I want them to. It's not so much for the audience. They've heard the Rejoiners 5 gazillion times. It's appropriate for the listener. I'm trying to influence them. What am I wanting to get to him? I go, look, the problem is not the regulation or the banks or this. The problem is a big giant bucket of money you created. Why do you think they created those buckets of money? Over decades, an entire generation that was promised that they're going to get taken care of. They had these pension funds. They worked for General Motors for 30 years. They get on and on and on. All of a sudden, the big baby boomers are going to retire. They have all these great, wonderful pension funds. They work for 20 years. They get 80% of their salary for the rest of their life as they work for some municipality, de la, whatever. You know, they're firemen. They're policemen. Now, they always get theirs. So here they come. They're retiring. Boom, give me. Oh, I'm sorry. Inflation took all the value away. Oh, I'm sorry. That pension fund defunded. It went down and lost in the stock. Oh, I'm sorry. That big giant chunk of money went over here. But, you know, and it sucks to be you. But, you know, the banks are too big to fail, so we're going to bail them out. But that doesn't obligate it's going to come anything to you. And you wonder how this happened. Because they created a bucket of money. You know, and I'm forced into it. I want to be, oh, well, then you get tax and disincentives for whatever. Oh, and then it's not matched by your employee, your employer, to be able to give you even, oh, but if, up to 3% or 10% or whatever it is, you know, you put in to the collective fund of the business, and they get to also add to that, and you get a big chunk of money in the bucket there. But why would the company do that? Because they get to write it off on whatever to put in their bucket of money. It's a bucket of money. Just buckets and buckets and buckets of money that they get later. You're just growing wool to be sheared later. And when was later? It was right now. And that's when they're doing it. And we're going to regulate them. Wake up, people. It was the bucket of money that did it. They're going to get it. Go ahead and create another bucket of money and see what happens.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock. Oh,
yeah. Your smile speaks books to me. Break up with each and every one of your lips. And you're starting something deep inside.
Looking for here on Clear Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. It's a breakthrough. What kind of breakthrough are we looking for? I don't know. Declaring independence thing. You know what? You don't even need to do it with me. I declare my independence. See how easy that was? Don't even need to do it with me. Do it on your own by yourself. And you don't need a government form. And let me tell you, I'm so when I deal with these people. I mean, it's good radio, and you get them to say their spiel, and they, you know, of course he's, you know, pimping for Roosevelt Institute 2.0 New Deal. He's from the left. I get these. Let me tell you how radio works. You get on various different lists over the years. You know, I get 5 gazillion people promoting their book. They want to talk to me about policies in Congress. They're voting on a law. Oh, my goodness. I love immigrants. I hate immigrants. The Gulf is, you know, a cesspool. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. No, it's not. Ouch, quit it. Yada, 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 yada. When these things happen in their news, every now and then we'll talk about them. We got them all over Freedom's Phoenix. You go to freedomsphoenix.com. You'll see, yep. I could pick, I got 50, 60 entries a day. I could spend an entire show on each one of these things. I mean, you know, I make an effort to put stuff up there about technology and science and advances and activism and people doing it all instead of just, you know, it's always with the negative waves. It's all a base philosophy. You can, once you become freedom oriented, once you clear the mind fog, once you can just take that and blow it away, all of a sudden, it becomes very clear. This whole entire financial crash was expected, predicted, determined by libertarians over the past, forever. You know, from the beginning. H.L. Mencken's writing about it back in the 20s, 30s, or whatever. He's going, look, of course I know what's going to happen. It's going to be this and this and this, and it's going to do that. They're going to redo it. They're going to come back. You know what they do? Confiscate gold. You know? Federal Reserve gets more and more power. Yep. And they start creating buckets of money. First, they do it with different programs. Pinky swear, because we love you. You'll be able to get it when you get older and retired. And then when you have the vast majority of the people actually starting to want to get it. Oh, I'm sorry. Did we spend that? I'm so sorry. We'll just print up some more. Then inflation hits. And what you do have is worth less. All of a sudden, this money you promised, hey, I was going to get, like, you know, it's not going to pay anything. I was going to get $250 a month, and you know, I can't even pay my rent with that. So screw it. I gave up my money. So they go, no, okay, we'll have this, that COLA, cost of living adjustment. So they say, all right, we'll do the cost of living. It goes up, you know, the cost of living. Well, they use the index for that, for the cost of living index. No, they have an index. Well, man, that's going up. I mean, it's shooting to the moon. It's going through the roof. It's going to be double digits. Oh, my goodness, it's going up. Social Security paid attention. So what we do? We change the cost of living index to not include fuel, food, and housing. So if you don't live anywhere or eat, you know, or go anywhere, well, then I guess you'd be okay. They change. It's a game. People, you know, what are you asking for? More government? More regulation? Of course I want to have these guys on. Come on, tell me, give me your spiel, man. Do it. Well, we need more, you know, whatever. I'm going to... It's all about the bucket of money there. If you force me or coerce me or social and economically engineer me and my employer to take all my extra and say, oh, it's mine somehow, but, you know, I'm going to be penalized if I take it out. I'm going to be penalized if I don't put it in. I'm going to have to wait, you know, X amount of forever to be able to even get it to take out and go buy silver with it or whatever anyway. And you force me to leave it in there. Well, of course the stock market's going to go up. Of course, I have to put it somewhere. You know, of course things are going to, you know, then what happens when you get into a deflationary, you know, stagnation, inflation, blah, 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 whatever the heck's going on now. You know, I hear both sides. I get deflation guys, inflation guys. All I know is that they put my money over there. I can't get it out. And guess what? They got to it before I could get it out. And when did I want it out? You know, when did the most Americans want to get it out? When they were retiring. When the baby boomers started to hit the retirement rolls, 65, when was that? Let me think. It was last year. So when did this happen? Clinky dink? I didn't think so. So what did they do? You know, they take, you know, sucks to be you. It's all ours now. Then the banks are going, you know, hey, man, you know what? It's a, you know, we're out. We need some kind. So they bail them out. Did it come back and did it make your pension funds go up or something? Did you get that money? Did it come back to you? You know, I'm going, they go, Wardy, why did they do it? How can they? Because, let me tell you, what was simple last year? All of a sudden, everything becomes clear when you understand. Because they can. You delegated this to them. Excuse me. You delegated this authority, this ability, these laws, this Congress, this these state pension, these funds, it all because they can. So what's the answer? Well, you can go out and beat them on the head and no, you can't, and I'm going to go vote and I'm, you know, or you can just stop giving them your money. You can start going off the system. You can start living differently. You can start planting a garden. You start doing the chickens. You start dealing in silver. You start finding people to barter with. You start changing your standard of living, your lifestyle. You get whatever. You spend a little extra on energy production and another to get you off the grid. Something. You know, something. And we were all trying it. Me and my friends, we've been doing this for years. We've got people. You know, I have, you know, my friend Bob Anderson comes in on a regular basis. He's a nuclear power plant supervisor that used to be actually in it. He was a, you know, kind of glow guy. He's changing the fuel inside the reactor 3 times a year. There's 3 reactors out there. They're going in, take it out, put the new one in, start that bad boy back up. So he moved. You know, he didn't want to travel. It's way out in the desert. So he moved past it like 10 miles. Lives right by the nuclear power plant. Works for Arizona Public Service Utilities. Totally off the grid. Don't get the electricity come to his house. Because even with him, they were going to charge him, you know, a gazillion dollars to bring it in from however not too far away. And he goes, you know what? Never freaking mind. I'll build it myself. Solar, wind, battery, generator backup, lives totally off grid. Septic, satellite internet, cell phone coverage. He has his own septic tank, his own electricity, his own well, his own. You know what he just built? Here in Arizona, it doesn't rain a lot, but it rains. And when it rains, there's like water. It's got to go somewhere. He has a wash that goes near his home there on the corner of his property. It has like 8 acres. You know what he did? He dug it out, took a backhoe. Oh, did he get a permit? I bet he probably didn't. And he went and he just dug, you know, this cistern that lined it with concrete panels, these kind of wallboard things. And he put 3 mil plastic in there. And he has, when it floods, you know, the wash fills up, goes in, 15,000 gallons of water, got a cistern. Extra water he needs in the summer for his fruit trees. Because he found, he goes, you know what? I got all the water I can ever drink and bathe in and all that kind of stuff. But you know what? The well, deep as I got and how much it produced, great water, too. It was very sweet, man. Nice and nice and very nice water. So he goes, you know, except let's say you get a nuclear leak. That'd probably suck. But he's got great water. So, at least now. So he has, you know, really good water there. And but it's just not quite enough for what he did to, you know, do an orchard or anything. So he figured it out. You know, one summer he goes, you know, I really need X amount of guy. I need to do so. Boom. He figured it out. How many times it rains and so on. How much this deep, this wide, this long. Cover it. Put it over there. It rains, fills up a cistern. Got all the water I need. I'm good. Are you thinking about things like this? Huh? Are you? Huh? You know, were you able to? How much of your money went to government that you couldn't, you know, had, nobody ever wants to talk about what you could have done with your own money had it not be engineered to put in somebody's bucket because they knew it was there, going to take it later anyway. What do you think was going on? It was just delayed savings. This is like, you know, like my kids. One of my kids, my third oldest, Corsair, young man, very intelligent guy, very industrious, very hard worker, very industrious. He was just like, you know, I remember his entire life, he would go out and bust his butt, work extra time on the weekends during the summer, save money. He saved a lot of money for whatever heck it was that he wanted. Bike, little motor scooter, blah, 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 dirt bikes. I mean, you know, he could do it. Absolutely, not a problem. Was he really saving money? I tried to get on going, no. You need to be thinking long term. You need to be thinking, you know, like it's silver or, you know, whatever. Nope. It was called delayed spending. It was already spent. It was just accumulating before they could spend it. Now that he's married, got a second child on the way, he's totally different now. He's a big saver. Paid off all his stuff, saved, because he learned his lesson. And I've, you know, been, you know, I never got in his way. I let him do it. I just, FYI, I just want you to know that feeling you get, oh, I wish I did. Well, that was a decision you should have made earlier. Well, now he's doing it. And I don't even have to bring anything up. He just does it on his own. It's all good. But what is all of these pension funds, all these social and economic engineering of these big giant pools of cash? It was just delayed spending for the big bad they, them, those. You know who they, them, those are? There are those that just want to be left alone, and there are those that just won't leave you alone, and they stole your money, and they want to keep doing it again and giving you this false sense of security so they can create another bucket of money in healthcare or whatever else they want to do, and they're going to take it again.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
You haven't got it yet. You should be getting it by now. Freedom's the answer. What's a freaking question? You know, I just, oh, man, some of these guys get me all worked up. You know what's going on now? Let me tell you what's going on now. Canada. You know what they're going to do? We don't need that penny anymore. It says Ottawa could withdraw the penny from circulation but still allow them to be accepted for commerce, or it could end production of the penny and demonetize the coin on a specific date, meaning they could no longer be used to pay for purchases. Pity the penny! When first produced in the at the Ottawa Mint in 1908, earlier production was done in England, you could buy a paper for 2 cents and a loaf of bread for 5 cents. But since then, it has lost 95% of its purchasing power. So we don't need it anymore. I'm not talking about, you know, why we don't need it anymore. It's just we don't need it anymore. Yeah, I wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. You know, I've been through, I remember it was in the late 90s. LA. There was, I had a restaurant, and it was very difficult to get pennies there for a while. Because what happened is they started to realize that the monetary content of the actual whatever metal was in the penny, I don't know if they even have any copper anymore, but, you know, it was worth like 1 point something cents. People were just taking them and melting them. You know, they just passed a law the last couple of years making that illegal. Because that's what, you know, I have a friend. Well, he's best friend of a good friend of mine. And at 13, he became a millionaire. How did he do that? Because pennies, dimes, nickels, whatever. He knew back then that they were worth more than what it cost him to get. And the laws hadn't caught up to people doing this. So as a young man, he was just ordering them from the mint, having them shipped straight to some refiner that was just melting them and giving him the difference. I can do that all day. Okay. And then they made it illegal just a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, because he was going to do it again. Remember when the nickel was worth, you know, 6, 7, 8 cents or whatever it was, and a penny 1.7 or something like that? He goes, well, okay, I can just do it again. Boom. They made it illegal. Don't think so? You go on Freedom's Phoenix, and you put, you know, just type in penny and nickels. You know, or penny, nickel, I bet you it comes up top five searches on a search on Freedom's Phoenix. We put that up, and I'm going, oh, yep, here we go again. So what do they do? You know, nobody's addressing why. It's because the dollar is going. And what do I get from Professor Ferguson? I go, okay, I just need to go. Well, the dollar is rallying. I'm going, big freaking deal this week. Heck, you know, the stock market went down to, you know, from, you know, what was it, 13,000 or some stupid number or something, down to 6. Then it's back up, you know, to 11 and jumps back down to 97. And it goes, I go, yeah, you know, all of a sudden you guys hit the radio, you know, in the week that it's up. Big freaking deal. Arrgh. Now, how stupid do you think I am? Oh, yeah, just so you know, FYI, that's libertarian, okay? So that, oh, well, yeah, I know, it's never going to, yeah, it says you. Okay? Well, it's going to happen anyway. What do you think's going on now? Bad money drives out good money. You put bad money up there, it's going to drive out good. I'll give you an example. When the silver coins, we had 90% silver up to 1965 in dimes, in quarters and half dollars. They were 90% silver. When they, you know, kind of, you know, we're not putting silver in them anymore, or that's not, you know, part of that, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture thing. And they started, you know, putting in whatever other metal because they could. What did it do? All the real silver coins started being driven out of circulation. They said, you know what? We'll just keep these and we'll use this other trash for you guys, but I'm keeping the good money. The good money gets driven out of circulation. Bad money drives out good money in the market. So now it's gotten to the point, that's what you hear about people trading in junk silver. Junk silver is, it's called junk silver because these old coins are worn enough that they're not, they don't have any real extra value as numismatic, you know, value, because it's a shiny dime that has, you know, the MS90, whatever the heck thing they call it, you know, they give a grade, it's so, it's the most uncirculated, oh my goodness, this is great, put it on your mantelpiece or something. Well, some people just don't care about that, you know, that's all a subjective thing anyway. But let me tell you what the value is of it, it just weighed a silver. A dime, I have thousands of dollars of this stuff, I just accumulated, I go buy junk silver at the coin dealer, they sell them in bags, of $500 face value. But the $500 in what face value is, it has nothing to do with what the real silver value is. Because each one of those little dimes are worth about $1.30-something, $1.40, whatever it is, in just their silver content. And it's a U.S. minted coin. So what happens when the apocalypse comes, the financial meltdown, they do the bank holiday, which is coming, by the way. They're going to do this bank holiday of, you know, at least a weekend or a week or whatever it is. They'll go, oh, you feeling kind of hungry now? Yeah, guess what? You're going to reconstitute your dollar into whatever. You think it won't happen? Heck, I don't know how countries it hasn't happened in. Sure as heck happened in Mexico. So you go, okay, so they're going to come back with whatever it is, a different monetary unit. Heck, they might even call it the dollar. But it's going to be based totally different, a basket of currencies out of the IMF and the World Bank that did the blah, 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 blah. And guess what? You're not going to get a vote on it, I can tell you that. So what happens when that goes, you know, nobody knows it's going to happen, or even if they can come back with that. People are going to have to still get stuff, and people are going to have stuff, and they're going to sell stuff for stuff. What's a traditional use of stuff? Well, unless you know, got chickens, you know, sell eggs or something, you know, maybe a silver dime might work. You know, I don't want to do an ounce of gold to fill my tank. You know, what are they going to give me change in? It's nice to have some silver. You know, it says 1963 quarter. Right there, I know it's worth, I don't know what I think it is, like it's like $8 or something, you know. A half dollar thing, it's worth like 12. So I go in, okay, here, boom, fill it up, real money. It's going to happen. That's what I was trying to tell Professor Ferguson. You can blah, blah, blah all you want. Sooner or later, now, it's just going to happen. They're just going to be trading and what? Because they just see, I have no faith in the system. You know, why should I now? It's all economically and socially engineered now anyway. So, you know, I Craigslist. Now eBay. Whatever. I have a friend of mine, he works for Intel. He always created it. It's a combination of Craigslist, eBay kind of thing. You can still do a bidding thing. You can post up your stuff, put a picture, and all that kind of stuff. They're still working on it. I think it's ready. I don't know what the problem is. I mean, they're, you know, he's Intel Uber geek. He's got to have something else. He's waiting for when things go or something. I don't know what he's waiting on. But, you know, they already started doing it. You pick the currency. I have a bicycle for sale. It is for sale for 100 Federal Reserve notes. Or X amount of grams of gold, or X amount of silver, or X amount of 1792 silver. 1792 was the Coin Act. It defined a dollar as 0.77 ounces of silver, I think it is. That's what, you know, a silver dollar, it's got 0.77 ounces, not full ounce. It's a dollar, you know, as defined by law. From the beginning of this country, they already knew a dollar meant something. It was good as gold. You see my point? It meant so much, you know, in silver, so much in gold. It was a thing. It actually meant something. Well, then they took that in the Federal Reserve, took even the silver certificate that you say, I got in my wallet right now, pull this bad boy out. You know, I always keep this thing around. I've had it for years. I just put it in there just because people don't even know it exists. Hopefully it's still in here. Here she goes. It's a silver dollar. I mean, yeah, silver certificate. And it says silver certificate. And what year is this? 1929, I think it's, let me get my glasses, because these certificates really were tradable in for actual silver and gold. I mean, you go in and it says, silver certificate, this certifies that there is on deposit in the Treasury of the United States of America $1 in silver payable to the bearer on demand. This was a bearer bond. This was, I go put it in, didn't matter who it is, you didn't have to sign anything, they didn't get ID, no fingerprint, no DNA sample, you know, no swabbing, you know, a swab, you know, with a, you know, earwax or anything. You just turn this in, you got X amount of silver, $1 in silver as defined by the 1790 whatever silver act, coin act. So I go, cool, you know, I vote that. Well, what'd they do? Well, then they started doing this Federal Reserve note thing, Ferns. Then there was, during JFK's time, he saw what was going on. It's one of the reasons, conspiracies, why they went after him, is because he's like, oh, heck no. We're going to go back to this silver thing. We're going to go back to real money. We're going to the Federal Reserve, CIA, all these guys, bad guys need to go away. So they had, for like 9 months, you had actual silver certificates. Get boom, done, he's gone. Next. Why? What kind of impact does that have on thing? Let's go, you know, let's just do it right here. Google search. Gosh darn it. JFK silver money. See what happens. Silver, JFK, net silver, John F. Kennedy versus Federal Reserve. I mean, you know, this is not like secret. You know, on June 4th, 1963, a virtually unknown president decree, Executive Order 11110, was signed with the authority to basically strip the Federal Reserve Bank of its power to loan money to the United States federal government at interest. With a stroke of a pen, President Kennedy declared that the privately owned Federal Reserve Bank would soon be out of business. And they were going to go to the Treasury started, Treasury Department had the authority to issue silver certificates against any silver bullion, blah, 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 blah. You think the Federal Reserve might wanted to, I'll leave this up. We'll talk about this next week. But you think they might have went, we don't like that none too much? Think maybe a little bit, What did I put in there? JFK silver money. Go Google it. Go research this stuff. It's going down. It's coming down. And all these guys, all they're talking about is putting Band-Aids on a system and distracting from what the real problem is. They are socially and economically engineering us to put buckets of money in their bucket, to create buckets of money. Being, you know, the health care legislation, whatever. More buckets of money so they can steal it again. Don't let them.